the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. I have been doing my taxes this week. You did not want to be in the room with me when I was doing it. I created all sorts of new vocabulary words, which are not repeatable in polite conversation, namely because it's not so badly that Jim to pay the tax. It's the absolute pain we have to go through every year to fill out these incredibly complicated tax forms. And that's an issue as to whether or not Congress is going to get its tax simplification through. But you know, whether you're still working on your taxes or you have already finished them and written out that nice juicy check, maybe some of you got a refund. We're going to focus today on bringing those taxes down because they do affect your retirement. So whether you're working, investing, whether you own your own business, whatever it is, a Schedule C, an S Corp, or you're retired, whether Congress gets its simplification through, well, that remains to be seen. But you do need to know several things. There are seven tax brackets. There's a tax bracket for losing itemized deductions. There's a tax bracket for losing your exemptions. There's a bracket for getting clobbered with Obamacare taxes. And one thing that is very, very clear is that taxes have become once again more complicated than they have been in times past. So the real question is then, how do you get control over all of this? And planning for your investing and including taxes as part of that is one way to do it.
The one thing that hopefully they will be able to get through, John, maybe there's going to be an agreement and within the Republican Party, is they want to simplify it down to three tax brackets. Right now, there are seven tax brackets that go from 10% all the way down to 39.6%. Now, here are a couple key things. We talked about this last week with my guest, Mr. Steven Siegel, but you really need to understand this because we have gotten emails, even some of our own clients have said, I didn't realize I had to come up with extra money for taxes. And here's probably one of the reasons you're having to come up with extra money for taxes, because once you reach a certain level of income, on your adjusted gross income, that's the number on the front part of your tax return. Pay close attention to what I'm about to say, because this is what I call the gotcha taxes. In most of the phone calls that we've been talking to, at least with our clients, and even some of the emails that we've gotten here on the show, are these next three categories I'm going to tell you. If you're single and you make over $261,500, you're going to lose part of your itemized deductions. They're going to take 3% of your adjusted gross income, and they're going to subtract that from your itemized deductions. That's if you're single. If you are married and make over $313,800, you are going to start losing part of your itemized deductions. If you are a head of household, you're going to start losing your itemized deductions when your income exceeds $287,650. So that's the first gotcha tax. The second gotcha tax are those very same numbers I just told you for single, 261, married, 313, 800, head of household, 287, 650. They start to phase out your personal exemption. And your personal exemption is $4,050. So if you are married, you get $8,100 as a married couple in exemptions. They start to phase those out once your income exceeds a certain level. The third gotcha tax is what we call the Obama tax. And that is if you are single, and these aren't indexed to inflation like the other brackets are. If you make over $200,000 as a single, $250,000 if you're married, you're going to be subject to an additional 0.9% in Obama tax or Medicare tax. Also, you're going to pay 3.8% additional tax on your investments in capital gains. So, you know, a lot of times people say, I can't believe it. I had to come up with this extra money. What did I do wrong? Chances are you either lost part of your itemized deductions, lost your personal exemptions, or you got hit with the Obamacare taxes. Those are usually the three that come back to bite you. If you're working, you probably have a number with exemptions that you use to withhold on your paycheck, so you're paying those taxes in. So usually the extra tax that you usually have to come up with in April is a result of two things. Either one, not accounting for your investment income, or number two, the three or four gotcha taxes that I just talked about. So that's why if you just got your tax return and you had to come up with extra money, chances are it's going to be one of those four reasons why you had to come up with that extra money to file this year's tax return. And folks, it just gets worse. The thing that we're going to talk about today is what are the things that you can control? And one of the things that, especially if you're saving for retirement, is you really need to be cognizant of two different marginal tax brackets when you're making your investments. And John, that's what I want to get into. This will get a little bit complicated, but it's really important that you understand this. Now, one of the things I'd like you to do, if you're listening to this show, go get your tax return. If you haven't quite filed your 2016 tax return, get the previous year's. If you just filed your tax return, I want you to get out your tax return because I want you to follow along with me. I'm going to make this very simple, but it's going to be very key in terms of understanding how to do some tax planning. And all you basically need to do is need the front page and the back page of your tax return. The first two pages of your tax return tells you everything you're going to need to know to do the kind of tax planning we're going to be talking about on the show today.
Okay, assuming now that you people listening have your tax return in front of you, at least the 1040 form, Jim, what do they need to know? Let's guide them around some of the lines here.
Okay, let's look at the first page of your tax return. There's two sections on that tax return. One is called income, and then below that is a section called adjusted gross income. And at the very bottom of the page, it's line item 37. That is called adjusted gross income. And that's after you deduct things like a health savings account, IRA deductions, if you have a SEP or simple IRA, penalties on early withdrawal, your student loan interest deduction, tuition and fees. Those things get down to adjusted gross income. Now, for those of you that just got hit with the three gotcha taxes that I just talked about, that is the number on which they're basing those gotcha taxes. The loss of your itemized deductions, phase out of your personal exemptions, the Obamacare taxes on extra Medicare taxes, and also the additional tax on your investment income is all based on that line item 37. That's the very last number on your tax return on the front page. I want you to write down that number because that's really, really important. Now, if you're listening, I want you to turn over the back side of the front page of your tax return. And there's a couple items, line items there that are important. Line number 40 is your itemized deductions. That's things like mortgage interest, charitable contributions, state taxes, miscellaneous deductions. Okay, that number gets reduced by 3% of your adjusted gross income if your income exceeds the 261 single, about 314 married, and about 287 if you're head of household. So that's why you need to know that number. Line item 42 is exemptions. And for 2016, it's 4,050. So once you exceed a certain level of adjusted gross income, they start phasing out those itemized deductions. For a married couple, if you are retired, it's 4,050 apiece, one for the husband, one for the wife. That turns out to be 8,100. The next item that is important is line item 43. It's called taxable income. Now, why you need to know that number? Because I want you to take that number and go to the tax tables and find out what tax bracket you're in. So based on what that number is, whatever it is in your case, You can just look up 2016 tax brackets, or even better, look at 2017, because we want to plan for this year. It's too late. You already filed your 2016. So go to Google 2017 U.S. tax brackets. So when you take whatever number is on line item 43, go and look at the tax brackets. If you're single, married, filing separate, or you're head of household, that will tell you what your marginal tax bracket is.
Yeah, before you go on, Jim, explain the importance of the marginal bracket when you're close in there.
Well, number one, the reason it's important to know your marginal tax bracket, whatever it is, I find most working couples today that are single are in the 25 to 28% bracket. If you make over $191,650, if you're single, you go into the 33% bracket. And you'll see the importance of this as we get to capital gains. If you are married, usually most married couples are in the 28 to 25% tax bracket, same with most people that are retired. But here's what's important. That marginal tax bracket is telling you that if you, for example, get a raise this year, let's just make this easy, and say you're in a 25% tax bracket. If you get $10,000 of additional income, that means if, let's say, for example, you get a raise, you get promoted, you get $10,000 more a year, that marginal tax bracket of 25% means the government's going to take 25% of the $10,000 raise. If you get a bonus at the end of the year, your 25% bracket, you get a bonus at the end of the year of $10,000, the government's going to take 25% of it. So it's also if you get additional investment income. I want you to know what that number is, because it's going to be significant when we now start talking about the things that you can control. Now, if you're listening to this program, turn back to the front page of your tax return. And I want you to go to the line item that says 8A, that says taxable interest. I want you to subtract that from line item number 37, your adjusted gross income. If you have tax-exempt interest, you don't need to subtract it because it's not taxable. If you have capital gains, you can leave that alone. If you have qualified dividends, I just want you to pay attention to that number. But basically, if you have any kind of taxable income from investments, I want you to back that out. You can also back out your dividends, and you can also back out your capital gains if you are at a key threshold of those three numbers that I told you about. 261 if you're single, 313 if you're married, 287, because you can change ordinary dividends or capital gains. There are various things you can do, but what you're trying to do is minimize your taxable income and in your investments. Because if you're in a 25% tax bracket and you make $10,000 of taxable interest, you're going to pay $2,500 on that $10,000 of taxable interest. And if you are in a state like I live in, California, where the top tax rate is 13.3%, and just about everybody is taxed at a 9.3% tax rate, then in addition to the 25%, you would also have to know what your state tax bracket is and add that to it. So let's say you live in my own state of California, you're in a 25% federal, you're in a 9.3% state bracket. That tells you that you're going to pay 34.3% tax on any additional investment income you get, like taxable interest, any raises that you get, any bonus. Now, here's another thing that's very important. Depending on what bracket you're in, it also determines what tax bracket you pay for dividends and also capital gains.
You know, I was under the impression, Jim, that capital gains were clamped at 15 or 20%, something in that range.
Not necessarily true. If you are in a 10% tax bracket, you're going to love this, you are in a 0% capital gains bracket. If you are in a 15% tax bracket, you pay zero on capital gains. So that's the great thing about being in a low tax bracket. If you have capital gains, you're not going to pay any tax on those capital gains. If you are in the 25% bracket all the way to the 35% bracket, you pay a 15% capital gains rate, and the same thing on dividends. Another way of saying this is, let's say that you're retired, you're living on your investment income. If you are in a low enough tax bracket, 10, 15%, if you invest in stocks that pay a dividend, you pay zero tax on those dividends or capital gains. Unfortunately, if you are in the 39.6% bracket, you jump up to the 20% bracket on capital gains. In addition, if your income is over 200,000 single and 250,000 married, you pay an additional 3.8% tax on capital gains and an additional 3.8% tax on dividends. So it's possible, depending on your income, you can pay 18.8% tax on dividends and capital gains. So this is really, really important when you're doing tax planning, is to know where you fall in those gotcha categories. And then also, I mean, we have a client whose income, where she pays actually zero. We moved her portfolio from interest income to dividend income because she paid zero tax on dividends, where she was paying 15% tax on interest. So not only did we get rid of her tax on her interest, but also she got a higher income with dividends. So if you're retired, I can't tell you how important this is to lower your taxes, because obviously if you lower your taxes, that's more money in your pocket. It's more money that you can save. And if you are working, if you can get your income down to the level of where you're only paying 15% tax on dividends, that certainly beats paying tax of 25, 28, 33, all the way to 39.6 to 44.6. So now what I want you to look at is, how can you lower your investment income?
And bringing this full circle to what it is we're doing here, Jim, I think the most important reason for doing this is because by reducing your investment income tax liability, you can actually improve your investment income.
There's only four ways that you can reduce your taxable investment income. The first is tax-free investing. Second is tax preference investing, which is dividends. Third is tax sheltered investing, and you can get that in two forms we'll talk about in a moment, or tax deferred investing. And there's two ways to get that. So these are four areas you need to start looking at when you're planning for your taxes, because if you are in a 25, 28% federal tax bracket, in a 5, 6, 7, 9% state tax bracket, you're paying anywhere from 34 to 35% taxes on your investment income or any additional bonuses that you may have.
Well, let's start with my favorite category, tax-free.
Everybody loves tax-free. There's two ways you can get tax-free income. One is to invest in tax-free bonds, which are exempt from federal taxation. And if you live in a state that has state income taxes, if you buy the tax-exempt bonds in your state, you also don't pay state income taxes. So this is the first thing. And if you look on your tax return, when you look under 8B, there's an item there called tax-exempt interest. You exclude that from your taxable income. A second way that you can get tax-free income is any income you take out of a Roth IRA once you've held that Roth IRA for 5 years. So this is another way that we're getting a lot of our clients tax-free income, by the use of Roth conversions or setting up Roth IRAs, depending on their income. So this is the first thing. And the great thing about that is you don't pay any tax on your Roth, and you don't pay any tax on your tax-free income. So that's the first one. The second way that you can reduce your taxable income on investments is what we call tax preference investments. And that is mainly dividends. As I just mentioned, the tax rate on dividends is anywhere from 0 to 15 to 20%. So, for example, if you're in a 25% to 33% tax bracket, instead of paying 33% or 25% on taxable interest, let's put it this way. Let's say you had two choices. You could receive $10,000 in taxable interest, or you could receive $10,000 in taxable dividends. Well, if dividends on that $10,000 in dividends, you're only going to pay $1,500 in tax on those dividends, versus if you're in a 25% bracket and you had $10,000 in taxable interest, you would pay $2,500 in taxes. So just by switching from taxable interest to dividends, you would save $1,000 on that taxable income of $10,000. And of course, even if you are in the high tax bracket at 39.6, you only pay 20% tax rate on dividends plus the 3.8% tax you would pay on Obamacare. So 23.8 is better than 39.6. So that's another way that you could save on taxable income. So most people are going to be in a 15% tax bracket when it comes to dividends and capital gains.
Okay, there were tax sheltered investments, and I guess a lot of people are under the impression that they sort of went by the wayside, what, during the tax reform that came in during the Reagan administration.
You can still get tax sheltered investments. One of them is something called master limited partnerships. These are partnerships that sell on the stock exchange, and 40 to 70% of the dividends could be exempt from federal and state taxes. Another form of tax sheltered income is things like rental real estate. Now, what went away with Reagan, John, is if let's say you had a lot of real estate tax losses from depreciation, interest, and expenses, you can only deduct those expenses to the extent that you have taxable rental income. So let's say you had rental income of $10,000, you can take up to $10,000 of deductions against that rental income and zero it out. It's one of the reasons that Donald Trump pays only about a 25% tax bracket is because he owns a lot of real estate. Most of his wealth is in real estate, so he can shelter it from depreciation. And a lot of wealthy people do that, including the Clintons. The Clintons own real estate tax shelters. So rental income is one way that you can get tax sheltered income.
And then there are tax deferred, which have some advantages, especially when planning for retirement.
Well, tax deferred is three forms. There are health savings accounts. You can put money in a health savings account and it grows tax free. And then you also get to exclude that on the front page of your tax return, so that it reduces your adjusted gross income. Another way you can get tax deferral is obviously the money you put in a 401k plan, your pension plan, a SEP IRA, a 403b plan, if you work for the government, a 457 plan, any kind of pension income, and then also if you have a tax deferred annuity. If I put $10,000 in a tax-deferred annuity and I get 3% interest, I don't pay any taxes on that because it grows tax-deferred, just like an IRA. So to recapitulate what we've talked about here, there's four ways to reduce your investment taxable income: tax-free, qualified dividends, tax-sheltered, or tax-deferred. But those are the things that you want to do, because that's why you need to know your marginal tax bracket, because you need to know how you can alter that. And what we're going to do is we'll talk about some of these ideas in a case study.
Well, you know, we do talk about retirement here. I mean, that's the goal of what we're planning. Why don't you give us an example how, say, for example, a retired couple could actually employ these tax-deferred, tax-reduced, tax-exempt strategies?
Okay, this was a case I think we talked about on the show last year. Let's just call this Jan and Bill Smith. Jan's pension, and she was a teacher, is $80,000 a year, all of it taxable. Their Social Security is $43,000 a year, of which 85% of their Social Security is taxable because they exceed a certain level of income. So out of that 43, their Social Security taxable income was $36,550. They had roughly about $1,000 of interest that came from basically money market accounts and CDs they had at the bank, which was close to $100,000. And then they had $450,000 in a taxable bond fund at 3%, which was close to $13,000. So their total income was $130,000 a year. Now, they lived in a home that was free and clear, so they didn't have any mortgage deductions, and they didn't have much in state taxes, so they took their standard deduction. And for a married couple, the standard deduction is $12,700. And then they also get an exemption of $4,050 apiece. As a married couple, that's $8,100. So their standard deduction and their personal exemptions gave them deductions of $20,800, which reduced their taxable income to $109,350. Now, since they had $109,000, the way the tax system works is you go through marginal tax brackets. For example, the first $18,160 that they had of taxable income is taxed at 10%. The tax on that is $1,816. The next $57,000 of income they had is taxed at a bracket of 15%, which was $8,588. And the final $33,450 they have of taxable income is taxed at 25%. That's $8,363. Their total taxes are $18,767. So roughly about $18,800 in federal taxes. When they came to us, they wanted to reduce their taxes because they were in a 9.3% California tax and they were in a 25% marginal tax rate for federal. So their marginal tax bracket on their investments was 34.3%. So what we did is we put 200,000 of their portfolio in tax-free bonds and we got close to 3%. You know, we basically said, why do you want to get close to 3% that's taxable when I can get you almost 3% that's tax-free? So what that did is by putting 200,000 in tax-free bonds, we removed $6,000 from being taxed at 25%. Then what we did is we put the remaining $250,000 in their portfolio in dividend paying stocks with an average of about 3.5%. Now, this was done 2 or 3 years ago when dividends obviously were much higher because stock prices were much lower. But that produced roughly about $8,800 a year in income. The gist of this, John, by going into tax freeze, that produced $6,000 of tax exempt income. And by going into dividends, not only did we get higher income, but also those dividends were taxed at 15%. So as a result of tax planning, we reduced their taxes by $2,000. It may not be much because the two big items we really couldn't do anything about was Jan's $80,000 teacher's pension and then also Social Security of $43,000, of which $36,550 was taxable. But we did reduce their taxable income by $2,000. I mean, you know, that's almost like $150 extra a month, but also we increased their income at the same time.
So to make sure that people didn't get lost through all of that, if you're going to reduce your taxable investment income, there are four ways to reduce your liability here. Tax-free investments, tax preference investments, tax sheltered, and tax deferred. And I should remind you, coming up tomorrow on the program, Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff will be with us. Deficits And entitlements, the real risk to Social Security and Medicare, which only seems to come up every so often amidst all of the fighting that goes on in Washington. But that's tomorrow here on the program. And the facts and figures that Professor Kotlikoff comes up with are always eye-openers. All right, Jim, time for our weekly case study to illustrate some of the principles you've been enunciating here. This is based on real people and their real investments, but we change their names to protect their privacy.
This week, we have Phil and Krista Brown. Both are age 61. They hope to retire in 4 or 5 years, which would take them closer to full retirement age for Social Security at age 66. Phil's life expectancy is age 90, long history of longevity in his family. Same thing with Krista. Her life expectancy is 93, like anybody nearing retirement. Their objectives are mainly conservative. They'd like to have income with capital preservation, just as most people are retired, especially after the bear markets that we saw in the last decade. I think, John, overall, one of the things that I've noticed in my career, and I've been doing this 37 years, is people are a lot more conservative today after the events of the last decade. Well, let's give you a little color in terms of who Phil and Krista are. Phil's a civil engineer. He's getting excited about the prospect of retirement. He's planning on retiring in 3 years after he reaches the 30-year anniversary with his employer. Taxes have and will continue to be a big concern with him because he's going to be receiving a pension in retirement. Very fortunate. He's managed their own investments over the years, and he's made decisions mostly by adopting a buy and hold approach, but with no periodic what we call rebalancing. And one of the things that really concerned them now that they were heading towards retirement, and especially listening to the program with the idea that the Fed is raising interest rates, the possibility of another recession in bear market, they didn't want to go through what they went through between 2007 and 2009 and what they went through between 2000 and 2002. He goes, I've already gone through two bear markets. And he said, I don't want to go through another bear market, given the fact that I want to retire in 3 years. The other problem that he had is he wanted to see a lot more diversification. Krista is a small business owner. She is also a little bit more uneasy about retirement. She's concerned about the high taxes they paid and how that's going to impact them in retirement. In other words, what's going to be different? She's been very adamant about asking her husband to use a professional because they're both talking about retirement. And she said, I don't want to go through what we went through in 2007. In 2008 is many people saw a lot of their investments lose half their value. We put them through our risk score assessment. They scored, and this is something we find over and over again, and it's something I think if you're listening to this program, you should examine yourself. They scored 3 out of a possible 10 on a risk assessment, 1 being the most conservative, with the number 10 being the most aggressive. So they scored 3, which is what you would expect, especially Krista, and especially also Phil, given the fact that they were retired. What was interesting is when we took their portfolio and used our risk assessment software, their risk score on their investments was 7%. One of the reasons that they were nervous is they saw downdrafts in 2013, they saw downdrafts in 2015, they saw downdrafts in 2016. Remember what it was like in the first couple months of the year. And the reason was their portfolio was a lot riskier than what their personal preferences were in terms of risk. Now, what was important to them? They wanted to maintain, like anybody else, getting ready for retirement. They wanted to maintain the same lifestyle. They wanted to make sure, as anybody else would, that they don't outlive their assets. They want to mitigate their taxes. They've always paid high taxes. And more importantly, they wanted to have the appropriate investment strategy to get them through retirement. Their budget, basically about close to $80,000 on essential, discretionary, roughly $38,000. So total of $117,000. Phil's salary, $98,000. Krista's salary, $45,000, rental income, $21,000. They had surplus income of $47,000. They figured that in retirement, Their essential budget would drop from 79 to 73. Discretionary would drop a couple thousand dollars a year. So they'd be roughly about 109,000. Their combined Social Security would be $36,000 a year. Phil's pension would be $35,000 a year. Rental income would be $21,000 a year. So they'd have a shortfall of $17,000 that would have to be made up with investments. Now, taking a look at their assets, they were in pretty good shape. Their primary residence was basically $550,000, and that was basically paid for. Rental property, $475,000. Phil's retirement 401k program would be $861,000. Krista's retirement, $114,000. And they had roughly about $50,000 in cash. Total investments of a little over $1 million. And total assets of about $2 million. What we did is we took a look at some of the challenges we had to face is update their asset allocation to better reflect their need for income and also to reduce the amount of risk they were taking in their portfolio. This is one thing that drove Krista crazy. Anytime there was a market correction, you know, you get your monthly statement and you say, what the heck happened? We just lost $40,000, $50,000. They wanted to better manage their taxes and they wanted a predictable income stream in retirement. They were also, like anybody else, given the longevity on both sides of the family, what would happen later on if either one of them ended up in a retirement home like their parents did. So what we did is we took a look at and we put basically a balanced portfolio that was mixed between 60% in fixed income and 40% in dividend paying stocks. And the income was over 3% a year. Part of that was, and this had a lot to do with Krista. Krista said, look, we would have had a lot more money had we been a lot more prudently invested over the last 17 years because they lost a lot of money. They were heavily invested in technology mutual funds when the bursting of the tech bubble occurred, and they were fully invested in stocks during the financial crisis of 2007 and 2009. So one of the things you always want to do when you're getting ready to retire is avoid something called sequence risk, which means going through the bear market at the beginning of your retirement. I mean, it basically took them 6 or 7 years to regain back everything they had lost during the financial downturn. So they did not want to go through that again. So based on their low risk profile, it was a little bit more weighted towards a bond portfolio. And that was to reduce the volatility and also to reduce the risk in the portfolio. But the net result is their surplus income increased by $13,000 a year. What we did to mitigate taxes is basically we increased contributions to their employer retirement plans, which reduced their adjusted gross income. Phil held a mortgage REIT, but they were triggering something called UBIT, called unrelated business interest tax. And we told them, you have an investment and it's triggering or another form of tax. So we got rid of the mortgage investment REIT. We also took some tax losses to help reposition their portfolio so we could make that transition. We also had them delay their Social Security until age 66, even though they were going to retire early. We said, look, if you wait to age 66, you get full retirement benefits. Why reduce that by 8% by taking it early? You have enough income and surplus with your pensions to get by. We also recommended that Phil take 50% survivor benefits on his pension. He would have got a lot more income, but by taking 50% survivor benefit, he made sure that Krista also had a pension from his company should he predecease her. So once again, John, you know, a little bit of tax planning and investment planning, aligning the couple's portfolio with the risk assessment because they really did not want to go through another 2007-2009 because, as Krista said, it took us almost 6 to 7 years to recover the losses from the last downturn. They certainly did not want to go through that again. That concludes today's show, but stay tuned to my special guest tomorrow, Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, as we take a look at budget deficits, fantasies, and realities in the shape of entitlements to come. And we're speaking about Social Security and Medicare, which is not being discussed in Congress these days. You'll want to hear that discussion with Professor Kotlikoff. That's coming up tomorrow on the program. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.